from St. Louis Public Radio. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum. Tuesday will mark the thrilling conclusion of a 2024 election season throughout the country. And in Missouri, the state's voters are deciding on a slew of important statewide contests, including the combative race between GOP Senator Josh Hawley and Democratic challenger Lucas Kuntz.
This is a very competitive race. And all you have to do is look at the money. I mean, they have dumped so much money into the state. And it's, I mean, all you have to do is turn on your TV.
It's not easy. It's not easy to break into a system that is literally specifically built and funded to keep people like us out. And so I'm just, you know, I'll be proud on November 6th that we were able to get to where we've gotten to.
But in some respects, a slew of consequential ballot initiatives are the main event in Missouri. And the state's voters could send a major message nationally if they pass Amendment 3, which would place abortion rights protections in the state constitution. Joining me now to preview Tuesday's contest is Sarah Kellogg, St. Louis Public Radio's State House and politics reporter. Sarah, welcome back to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air.
Hi, Jason. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. We're almost at the end. What would be the best way you'd describe how Missouri's general election season has unfolded?
You know, so far, I would say it's mostly predictable as far as the candidates that are in these final races. I know the primary, there was a couple unexpected wins, such as Dave Wassinger, who's the Republican nominee for lieutenant governor. But a lot of times, kind of who the general people thought would be the winners of the primary are the winners of the primary, you know, when it comes down to all the races. And so I think it's been mostly predictable, but it's going to be really interesting to see how election night comes out, especially with those aforementioned ballot issues.
And we'll talk about the ballot initiatives later, but I want to start off by talking with the statewide and state legislative races first. As I mentioned, the most high profile contest may be the race between Josh Hawley and Lucas Kuntz. It's brought some notable surrogates to the state. Kansas City Chiefs kicker Harrison Butker went on a statewide tour for Hawley, while entertainment icon and former John Burroughs drama teacher John Hamm also came to stump for Kuntz, and I talked with Hamm yesterday in St. Louis.
I'm concerned, like anybody else voting in this election. That's why I came back. You know, I consider myself still a St. Louisan, a Missourian, but more than that, you know, I'm concerned about the future. And I don't like who's representing my state in the United States Senate. I want somebody that is honorable. I want somebody that is truthful. And I want somebody whose values are more in line with mine. And that is currently not the case.
That's actor John Hamm talking with me about his support for Democrat Lucas Kuntz. Sarah, is the star power in this contest a sign that this race could be closer than people expect?
Well, first of all, Jason, I'm just going to say how jealous I am that you got to talk to John Hamm. That's amazing. But I think that ultimately this race kind of shows just how prominent Josh Hawley is in politics, not just in Missouri politics, but nationwide. Obviously had a very prominent profile on January 6th with that photo of him raising his fist to Trump supporters. So I think there's just a lot of attention on Josh Hawley. And I think that's, again, drawing money from opponents who don't want him elected as well as supporters for him. So I think the race will be closer than maybe people expect, but I think that it just shows a nature to who they are as candidates.
I'd like to invite our listeners into this conversation. If you have a question about Missouri's 2024 election, give us a call at 314-382-8255. One of the notable things about this contest is that Hawley has been really aggressive against Kuntz in ads, in speeches, at the Missouri State Fair, and at a debate last night at KTVI Studios in St. Louis.
When he was running for a different office, he wouldn't say who he was going to support for president then either. In 2023, he wouldn't say whether or not he wanted Joe Biden to run for re-election. Now he won't tell Missouri who he's voting for. Listen, I'll just say this again. You may not agree with me on every position that I take, but when I take a position, I'll be honest with you about it, and I will stick to it.
That was U.S. Senator Josh Hawley in a debate with Democrat Lucas Kuntz last night at KTVI Studios in St. Louis. Sarah, what do you think about Hawley's aggressive strategy here?
I think Holly's strategy of kind of coming out hot is really interesting, in part because I think this is his first reelection bid. And so this is the first time since he won 6 years ago that he is up for reelection. So I think it's kind of setting the stage for how he might react to other opponents down the line if he were to be reelected. I think it's kind of setting the scene of, like, this is how aggressive I'm going to be against you if you decide to run against me. So I think it was kind of setting a precedent in part. I also think that between the two of them, NPR's Daniel Kurtzleben talks about this a lot, just masculinity in politics. And that, I've just gotten such a vibe of that, of just kind of like the manliness when it comes to politics, especially when it comes to this particular race. So it's just been very interesting to watch. And I think that we'll see if it pays off, but I think coming out hot, I think it kind of sets a standard for what he might do in future elections if reelected.
One of the races that you have been covering very closely is the gubernatorial contest between Republican Mike Kehoe and Democrat Crystal Quaid. And I'm going to be brutally honest here. Like, this contest seems to favor Kehoe based off public polling and finances. But Quaid is a really impressive candidate in her own right. I know that she has sparked a lot of excitement among Missouri Democrats. How do you kind of, like, see this race going forward on Election Day?
It is the closest race as far as statewide when it comes to polling. And I think it just depends on how, on turnout, on excitement. I do think, you know, I spoke with some Democrats in Jefferson County about a couple weeks ago. And first of all, they had nothing but glowing things to say about Representative Crystal Quaid, saying that she's the strongest candidate the Democrats have had for governor in years. And I think that that kind of marks a shift of the bench building the Democrats have been working on the last, gosh, since they pretty much lost the majority. And so there's a lot of building back. And I think that she might be a culmination of that, and as well as the work that she's done. But I do think that ultimately Kehoe is still favored. I think the fact that of the major three candidates in the primary that he was in theory criticized for being the most moderate, the least conservative of the three, I think that that might also be welcoming to maybe some independents that might be on the fence, the fact that he isn't as quote unquote extreme. So I do think he is probably still slated to win, but I'd be interesting to see kind of how the numbers lay out at the end of the day.
And that brings us our first question from social media from P. Feuerborn on Instagram. How big of an indictment is it on the Democratic brand in Missouri when things like marijuana and abortion pass statewide, with Democrats getting shut out on statewide seats on those same ballots? Now, before I pose the question to you, we should point out that abortion has not yet passed statewide, and it may not pass statewide. But this is a common question about, like, why does Missouri adopt progressive ballot initiatives while, you know, voting for Republican candidates? I have a lot of theories, Sarah, but, like, what's your thought on that question?
Well, I first want to say this isn't just a uniquely Missouri thing. I covered Arkansas politics for a couple of years, and when I was there, they passed medical marijuana and a minimum wage increase. And so it's not something that's tied to party. I think when you separate the issues and there's not an R or D next to something, I think it leads to the ability of candidates to break on what they've maybe done in the past for what they actually are analyzing. I think it's just, I will say there's just a lot to be said for how powerful political parties are. I don't know if it's an indictment on the brand here, because I think there are plenty of Democrats that are stumping not only for themselves or statewide candidates, but for Amendment 3, you know, Prop A and a bunch of other things. I just think that ultimately there's just kind of a disconnect, and that's hard to overcome unless it's just with a huge education campaign.
I think one of the reasons why progressive ballot initiatives have done so well in Missouri is the opposition campaigns have been frankly terrible. And oftentimes that when you have a bad no campaign, the yes side is going to win almost by default. But I think another factor, especially going into this year, why Democratic candidates from a statewide level are going to be at a disadvantage is the presidential race. Like, GOP nominee Donald Trump is going to win here easily. But there is some optimism that Democrat Kamala Harris could do well in places like St. Louis County, thanks to voters like Cale Riggs, who are planning to vote for the vice president.
I really think that there are some dangerous ideas inside of what would eventually become the Trump administration. And I definitely don't want to see a lot of those ideas take hold, because I certainly don't think they would be good for the country.
That's Cale Riggs, a St. Louis County resident who is backing Democratic presidential hopeful Kamala Harris. So this is probably more in your bailiwick for two reasons, Sarah. First, you cover the Missouri legislature and you're a native of St. Louis County. What do you think the down ballot impact could be especially in competitive state legislative races in West County and the Kansas City area.
I think with state house races, it actually could be kind of a big difference, especially when it comes to just getting out new voters. I think that there is a greater enthusiasm for Vice President Harris than there was for current President Joe Biden when he was on the ballot. And so I think it's, for this new strategy, it's kind of less about convincing maybe people who are on the fence and getting up new voters that wouldn't have even been a factor before. And I think that in competitive races, I think both Harris as well as the amendments that we'll be talking about soon, that will be enough to maybe be a decider in some of the state house races in the Missouri House, as well as maybe even the Senate.
We need to take a quick break, but as a reminder, I'd like to invite our listeners into this conversation. If you have a question about Tuesday's election in Missouri, give us a call at 314-382-8255. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. We now return to our conversation with St. Louis Public Radio's Sarah Kellogg. Okay, Sarah, you know me. I'm prone to hyperbole, especially around elections. I say things that may be seen as alarmist or crazy, but I truly think that the result of Amendment 3 is a profoundly important one. I think this may be one of the most important ballot initiatives that Missourians have decided in the last 20 or 30 years. Do you also feel the weight of this decision to legalize abortion in Missouri like I do?
I think so. I definitely think that the fact that it was as the earliest election it could be, I think says a lot. I think that, you know, if it were passed, Missouri would be the first state to overturn an abortion ban by votes in the country. So there's a lot of country waves that go with this, too. I think it could make a really big statement if it were to pass.
Missouri banned most abortions after Roe versus Wade, minutes after Roe versus Wade, no exceptions for rape or incest. And despite Missouri being a GOP-leaning state, the yes side of Amendment 3 raised tens of millions of dollars, signed up thousands of volunteers, and prompted Webster Groves native and fashion icon Carly Kloss to contribute. She talked with me this week in Webster Groves about the high stakes of Tuesday's election.
One, it would tell us what we already know, which is that a majority of Americans agree that a woman should have the right to choose. But it will continue to show that. And two, it will be historic, because this will be a historic moment, which is why I'm so grateful to everybody who has contributed so much effort into Yes on 3. That's why I'm here knocking on doors, because this is the final stretch to really push this across the line and create access to critical life-saving care here in the state of Missouri. So women who need this care do not have to travel across state lines.
That's Webster Groves native, model, and entrepreneur Carly Kloss talking with me about her support for Amendment 3 earlier this week. Sarah, it may seem difficult to believe that a Republican state like Missouri could be on the precipice of enshrining abortion rights in the Constitution, but are you also feeling like this Amendment 3 has a lot of momentum going into Election Day?
I absolutely do. I think we also have to think about why it's even on the ballot in the first place, which required thousands of signatures, and through multiple lawsuits, there was a deficit in months and time to gather the signatures in the first place. So the fact that they were able to even get those signatures in a smaller amount of time shows how much momentum there is. We will say, you know, early polling on this shows that it is passing. And honestly, I'm going to give a lot of credit to you, Jason, in that, and I promise I didn't talk with you ahead of this, but you know, you're reporting on how there are plenty of people that are maybe going to vote for Republicans down ballot, but they're going to vote for 3. There's not a monolith. There's not one way to vote if you're, a Republican or a Democrat. And I think we are going to see a lot of split ballots. So I think there is a lot of momentum for this. And right now, if you have to ask me, I do think it's going to pass.
I'd like to invite our listeners into this conversation. As a reminder, if you have a question about Missouri's 2024 election, give us a call at 314-382-8255. So, Sarah, our good friend Vice Admiral Walrus from Reddit asks, if Amendment 3 passes, what is your read on what the state government will do in response? And One possibility is that the GOP-controlled legislature could put something else on the ballot in 2026, which GOP State Senator Mary Elizabeth Coleman discussed on a recent episode of the Politically Speaking podcast.
If abortion does become enshrined in our Constitution, I think you're going to see the state legislature immediately put onto the ballot again efforts to change that, to tap it down, to repeal it entirely. They're going to put something on the ballot. Missouri is a pro-life state. We had the first pro-life laws on the books back in the 1890s. And so to think that that would go unchallenged by the Republican supermajority, I think, is probably a little bit of a pipe dream.
That's State Senator Mary Elizabeth Coleman, a Republican from Arnold, who opposes Amendment 3. Sarah, what do you think about the senator's comments there?
I do agree that I think there are going to immediately be efforts to try to modify it, repeal Amendment 3, if it were to pass. But I, you know, Senator Coleman is one person. There's, you know, and I do think it probably would be a popular stance. But I will say, and I'm going to cite some reporting from the Missouri Independent from just not too long ago, that if elected, the presumed Speaker of the House, Representative John Patterson, has said that if Amendment 3 passes, the legislature should respect the voters' decision, and it will be the law, you know, quote, it will be the law of the land, and we have to go forward as the people decide. And that's the leader of the Missouri House, presumptive leader, if he were to be reelected in November. And so I think there's going to be a clash of heads. I know that's so surprising in the Missouri legislature, but I don't think it's going to be an easy lift either way, because you do have the people saying, no, we want this. And for the legislature to turn around and immediately change it, I think there's going to be some pushback to that.
Let's go to Sergey in St. Louis, who has a question about judges. Sergey, welcome to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. So, I have been finding it a little bit hard to find resources on just the judges and just their judging record. And just so I could brief myself a little bit more before the election, I was wondering if you guys had any resources.
I have one resource. First of all, thank you for your call. One is the Missouri Bar Association typically puts out recommendations on which judges should be retained or which ones should not be retained. One of the interesting things, and I think I can pose this to Sarah, is that with Amendment 3, there has been kind of this grassroots push for people to vote no on Missouri Supreme Court judges Ginger Gooch and Kelly Broniak. And I don't know if this is an example of internet isn't real life, but it does seem like there is some energy among some Democrats not to retain them. What do you think about that, Sarah?
I want to put a little context first. Is when this ballot initiative was being challenged and it went up to the Supreme Court, gosh, you know, the deadline, pretty much right before the deadline to put it on the ballot itself, Broniak and Gooch were a part of the three that said no. So I want to give context as to why. So if they had their way, the amendment wouldn't have been on the ballot. But I think this is an instance of maybe the internet not being real life. I think that there's not enough of a quote-unquote campaign to get that going at this kind of point in the game. And I think that maybe we'll see higher no votes maybe than other Supreme Court judges in the past, but I'm not sure if it's enough to put too much of a thumb on the scale to have them not be retained.
Sergey called us at 314-382-8255. We do have open lines. You can give us a call. Again, our number is 314-382-8255. I do want to also mention that St. Louis Public Radio has a great voter's guide, and that is at stlpr.org/voters-guide, where we talk a lot about not only statewide races and ballot initiatives, but also judges. Let's move on to your favorite item, possibly, Sarah, sports betting. Do you think Amendment 2 can withstand the withering attacks and make it past the finish line?
I think that's a really good question. I will say, as I've talked with friends and family and even voters just throughout this election season, I have gotten the most questions about Amendment 2. And the biggest question being, I saw an ad for Amendment 2 and they said it's all this money is going to be going to schools. And then I saw an ad against Amendment 2 and said no money is going to schools. So which is it? I've gotten so many questions about that. And I think it's kind of muddied the waters enough that we'll see. I think this is going to be a much closer race than if you had asked me back in July. I think it would have been a lot easier. I think it's going to be a much closer race than we initially thought.
Yeah. And one of the notable things is the discourse over Amendment 2 is more about whether proceeds will really go to education spending, as you mentioned. And I think the fact that the no side is funded by a Caesars casino-affiliated group takes away the most poignant argument against the measure, that sports betting is addictive and destructive to people and maybe shouldn't be widely available on people's phones. Sarah, I know you and I personally disagree with that, but it seems like that message may be better to defeat this amendment than like this navel-gazing about where the money is going. What do you think about that?
I mean, I think you have to consider that this is a casino-funded no measure. And I think that in the future, they might want sports betting at their casinos. So I think the argument of it being, you know, addictive is not what they want. Because, you know, in prior iterations of sports betting bills in Missouri, the casinos, the sport, and the sports organizations were all together on it. And so this particular version might not have the support. But if this doesn't pass, well, maybe in the future they would. So I think that that's probably being avoided for a reason.
Another so-called progressive initiative that is on the ballot is Proposition A. It would raise the minimum wage and guarantee paid sick leave. This one doesn't seem to have the robust opposition campaign compared to Amendment 2 and 3. There are business groups like the Missouri Chamber of Commerce that are opposing it, but it seems that Missouri could be on the precipice of bumping up the minimum wage to $15 an hour by 2026. What's kind of your read on Proposition A?
I mean, I agree with you on this one. I think that you're looking at a $15 minimum wage in 26. I think that an everyday voter is going to say that and say, yeah, that seems right for this day and age with how expensive things are and, you know, inflation, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think that that's seen as maybe a reasonable ask. I think the sick leave is also a really interesting aspect of this, of being entitled to sick days. I think that will also probably be like, oh, yeah, people deserve to have sick leave when they're doing their work. And so I think that you're right. There's not as much of a vocal no. Like, there is some opposition, but I don't think it's enough to maybe influence voters. I do see this probably passing.
Let's go to Lisa from St. Louis, who I think also wants to continue to talk about Amendment 2. Lisa, welcome to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air.
Hi, thanks. I have heard mixed things about these gambling bills. I have a friend who's a teacher who had somebody from NEA come and speak to her, like a union rep, I believe it was. And they said that the money that's generated from the gambling does go towards education, but then it's basically deducted from the budget. So it's a wash.
Yes, and that is kind of a common criticism of a lot of gambling-related measures, that yes, money will go to education, but the legislature can just move money that was in education elsewhere. I mean, Sarah, you follow the budget process. I'm sure you've heard this type of argument before. What do you kind of make of Lisa's question?
Yeah, I've seen this time and time again with lottery funds. That, in theory, goes to education. But then what happens a lot of the time is when the budget is being created, there'll be lots of fund swaps. So lottery funding will then go to GA or vice versa. And so in theory, yes, there's going to be like more money coming in, but then that money is fund swapped and gone somewhere else, not necessarily to education. So there's lots of fund swapping that goes around. And I think that that definitely could be a situation that happens with the sports betting if it were to pass.
I do also want to talk about Amendment 7, which would ban ranked choice voting in Missouri. It would also definitively say that non-citizens can't vote here, which already can't happen in state and federal elections. But I guess hypothetically, non-citizens could vote in local elections at some point in time in the future. What's your read on how this will fare?
You know, I think in another year, this might have had a lot more advertisement and focus on it. But I think with Amendment 2 and 3 taking up a lot of the oxygen, this one's kind of just remaining. And I do think, you know, I've early voted. And when I looked at the amendment, the first thing on there is the should non-citizens not vote in elections? That's first before it is the ranked choice voting. And so I think that is going to catch a lot of people off guard, maybe think, oh, isn't that already illegal, which it already is. And they're going to check yes. So I just don't know if there's enough of a no campaign to go over this and overturn it or to reject it. I think this one may pass, but I don't feel like comfortable enough kind of making that call.
I do want to talk about how this election is unfolding. This is the first presidential election with no excuse in-person absentee voting. Yes, there was kind of an expanded early voting period during 2020 because of COVID, but it's not really the same as you can go 2 weeks before the election and just vote at a certain place in election authority for any reason. And friend of the show, Amy Snively asks, are long early voting lines more turnout or just shorter election day lines? And I think the answer here is I don't know. But Sarah, how do you think the expansion of early voting could affect what happens on election day?
I also agree with the I don't know of this too, but I think that with early, if more people go to early vote, that means the lines are in theory less long on election day, which means that more people who might have turned around because the lines were so long on election day might stand in line and vote. So I think it maybe could lead to a higher turnout, but you know, that's who's to say, but that's kind of my take on it.
And that's like a big national question right now, because in more competitive presidential states, like, people are really doing, I think, intense analysis of, like, who's coming out, especially in states that have party identification. I think it's worth noting that just because somebody is registered a certain way doesn't mean they're going to vote for Harris or Trump. Like, there are a lot of Republicans in heavily Democratic areas that may register as Democrats and a lot of Democrats who may register as Republicans. So I'm not really sure you can really read up too much into what the results are going to be just by the fact that early voting numbers are up here or elsewhere. Is that kind of your perception as well?
Yep. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Before we go, we have like a minute left. What are some other things you're going to be looking for on Election Day, Sarah?
I'm really interested to, I mean, honestly, my entire focus is on the ballot initiatives, I think, in addition to the statewide races. I'm really looking at the Missouri House. That's my real answer, because right now, Missouri House Democrats only need 3 seats to break the supermajority of Republicans in the Missouri House. And the Senate, I believe, only needs 2. So I'm really looking to see if Amendment 3 being on the ballot, if Kamala Harris being on the ballot, if even just excitement for enthusiasm for Quaid or Lott Gross or the other Democrats, Kuntz, is enough to break the supermajority. That will be a huge change. And I think that that will be kind of showing the bench building that Democrats have worked on the last, gosh, years.
Sarah Kellogg is St. Louis Public Radio State House and Politics reporter. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us.
You're so welcome.
Today's episode was produced by Jason Rosenbaum.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Dorr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.